Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Somebody please think of the children.
Welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly, we're back to weekly minisode where we dig into the things that we've been watching recently. I'm Terry.
I'm Mary Beth, also a ghost. And this week we are talking all things Unnamed Footage Festival, but also with a little sprinkling of 30 Rock at the end.
A little bit of 30 Rock at the end, yeah.
Just a little bit of 30 Rock. But yes, we are going back to weekly. Just so everyone knows, we decided it's just easier and better for everyone involved. Everything's kind of calmed down for us as much as it will for a while. So, we going back to regularly scheduled programming. There we go. There are the words.
Yeah, it's it was a nice little break, I will say, because we were both, like, things were just a lot happening. So it was kind of nice, but I will say that I missed having them come out every week. So here we go. Yay. But Unnamed Footage Festival, what a great trip this was this year.
It was awesome. So this was my third year going, your second.
My second.
And Carter's first.
Yeah. It was so great to have Carter there.
Yeah, that was all. It was so lovely to have everyone there. And it definitely felt like the biggest year for the fest so far, which is saying something because it's a pretty small festival, like in-person attendance wise. And it felt, well, one, it was longer this year. There was a full, they added instead of a half day on Friday, it was a full day on Friday of movies, which is awesome because they had so many submissions and there were lots of more filmmakers in attendance and a lot more local people this year who were talking to me about how they hadn't, you know, heard of it before or they're finally coming out. So it's really cool to see the festival getting bigger. I'm like such a brat. I'm like, but I want my festival for me forever. But I'm really glad that they're getting the love and attention they deserve because Madeline and Russell and Oksana and Terrell and all of them are just doing like such cool work that we love. So we're excited to talk about all the cool shit we saw because we saw a lot of stuff.
We sure did. I had to actually pull up my letterbox to go, what
did we see? I had to pull it up right now because I was like,
there was so much. I think, like, so one of I want to talk about a little surprise film that that I don't think either of us thought much of, like, initially. Like, we're going to go into going, I'm not sure about this one, and it ended up being, like, really interesting. And that was a movie called The Coldness.
Yes. This was a movie that Madeline, the festival founder and director, who was on the podcast last year. Was it last year?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jesus. Time is fake. She was hyping it up to me as, like, you know, it's like really cool film that kind of came out of nowhere. And this is like the movie, this is like one of those movies that this festival is for, because I never would have heard of it. And again, it hasn't really gone, this was its world premiere, which is awesome. And I guess we should probably just talk about what it's about before we get into talking about it. But so The Coldness is your pretty standard kind of setup here. We have one guy, he's played by Paul Parducci, who also wrote this. He's playing a retired police homicide detective who used to live in New Jersey, is now in LA. And there was a case in the 90s that haunted him where a young girl was found dead in a refrigerator, but she had locked herself in and swallowed the key, and they had never really found out why. And now
and broke
another person,
broke the temperature gauge so that it would freeze her.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. A very important part. This happens again in Los Angeles, and he is like reopening the investigation on his own to figure out who the, like, what is going on here. And he ends up falling into a very fascinating world of chaos magic in a very grounded way. It's not like magic, but it's very much like, uh-oh, someone fell down a rabbit hole on Tumblr and got access to things that they shouldn't have gotten access to. And it goes from there. It's very simple, but the performance, especially by Nick Parducci, is really, really good. If it wasn't good, it wouldn't have been a good movie. That's like, this is one of those, in my review for Dread Central, like, this is a movie that proves why found footage needs to be taken more seriously and, like, why performances need to be valued so much more in found footage. Mm-hmm. Because if that performance hadn't been good, the movie would have been terrible. But because he's so convincing and, like, is able to give such an emotional performance, it makes it all the more engaging and interesting.
Yeah, I love that it's sort of, it's a very grounded, almost noir-ish type of story where you have, like, the homicide detective who's now retired, a case has haunted him, now he finds another case across the country and he goes. So it's like, it's very noir and it stays grounded through pretty much the entire movie. It's a quiet film, but it is also kind of quietly haunting, and the way in which the magic comes into play is very subtle and very like, it's not flashy, but I think that it helps keep the narrative very grounded in what is happening. And as Mary Beth said, if it weren't for the acting of Paul, this wouldn't have worked. He's very convincing. And he wrote the script, which they actually had a script, so it wasn't, there was a little bit of improvisation, but like most of it was scripted out. And I think you can tell, because it definitely has a tight narrative to it.
Yeah. Like it, and like Carter said, it does feel like he just picked up a camera to film himself. He does a really good job with, like, and I do something really interesting that I haven't seen in a lot of found footage movies, where he goes, oh, someone told me to film with two cameras. So they have, but I like that though, because that gave a reason to have like the conversations. I think it's a little awkward in some spots with like the camera placement, but like, whatever, like, you know, sometimes they feel bad like nitpicking these things in these low budget movies, but whatever. But it gives a reason for there to be like a camera on him and on the person he's interviewing, and it's really smart. He's like, I got two cameras, I'm ready to go. And so I like that very small but like important addition that makes it feel, again, like he's just teaching himself on YouTube how to do all this stuff, and also just like gives a good reason for why, and gives us also more like footage and access to seeing all around, which I like a lot.
Yeah,
so I did too. I'm going to start talking about this to everybody, and hopefully it'll get picked up somewhere. I mean, this is like definitely a movie that I think a place like Welcome Villain, who was a sponsor of the fest. So like really quick, because there was a lot of movies at this festival that I already seen. Not a lot, like 7 or 8. Like Mind, Body, Spirit and Puzzle Box were there. That I've both seen. They're both Welcome Villain. And Invoking Yell is also for Welcome Villain, which is at last year's festival. So I'm hoping I can get into someone's ear in place like that to, like, support this movie and at least, like, get it on a platform, because it is something special. I think this is, like, one of these movies that you're like, this is why I love found footage. It is a guy who wrote a simple script, picked up a camera, and made something really weird and effective. And I hope we can get more eyeballs on it. When it eventually is available for people to see more widely.
Yeah. Me too. It was a good surprise. It was a good surprise.
That was one of my favorites from the festival. I'm looking at the stuff that I saw. I really liked, another one that I really enjoyed at the festival was Live Screamers, which was directed by Michelle Inantuono. And this is the sequel to Live Scream, but it's really like the next kind of version of it. It's not necessarily related. So here, instead of it being one person streaming a video game, it is like it's a group, it's a gaming group called Janice Gaming, recording a Let's Play with a fan who won in a contest or a fundraising contest a spot to play with them in a Let's Play. And it's all Second Life, or not Second Life, Jesus, Screen Life, where it's essentially every person has their own little webcam set up, and that's the only cameras you get. You get, I think, 8 or 9 setups that are, like, just static cameras, and then we're in the world of the game, which Michelle also developed in Unreal Engine. So they're playing a game that she developed, and while they're playing the game, lots of things unfold with the players and the fan. And I think there's a lot of tropes in this movie, but I think there's a lot of tropes in this movie that tackle online gaming communities in a way that we've never seen in horror, because I think it's a very niche subject that maybe not as many people know about, or it's not, like, people haven't decided to tackle, but I think this is very much, like, the stay alive for our generation, however you want to take that comparison. I'm a huge Stay Alive fan, but, and this is also tackling, like, everything you can think of in the gaming community that's toxic, like gay for pay kind of stuff, of, like, pretending to be gay, like guys pretending to be gay, the queer baiting to get people's attention, tokenizing minority players, saying that the queer people and the people of color in the group aren't, like, funny enough or good enough, and, like, all, like, everything is kind of going on in the script in a really interesting way, I thought.
Yeah, it's. I think this one will resonate a lot more with people that watch a bunch of Twitch streamers or YouTubers. What kind of jumped out at me immediately is, like, the kind of content houses that have popped up, particularly over in California. Like, the one that like I'm thinking of immediately is 100 Thieves, and this is sort of like that, where it's like a group of people that, you know, create content and make money off of it and are in a recording studio together. And so it's sort of digging into the microaggressions, as well as some of the misogyny and also the inappropriateness that sometimes happens with, like, parasocial relationships online. And so it's interesting because it has a little bit of, like, shining a light on that, but also on the actual viewer and the kind of relationship that the viewer feels that they have created with people that they've never met. And so there's, like, a lot to do with online culture there. And I, yeah, Carter said that as a non-Twitch screener watcher was like, yeah, I do think this one is probably a little bit more niche in that regard. But for people that have played games, like, I was, like, internalized cackling and going, oh, yeah.
A lot of it, I was like, I know exactly who these people are. Mm-hmm. I've seen this happen online. I've seen this a million times. And to have it tackled by a woman, a director, a female director who also, like, she's made a lot of, like, she made a cyberpunk film, like a cyberpunk fan movie too. And, like, so she's very much in not just fandom, but in video game development. So I really was excited to see this one from her. So definitely keep an eye out for that. That one's playing also at Panic Fest. And it's probably going to be at a couple more festivals. It's getting a decent amount of eyeballs on it now since it's getting some good reviews. So yeah. Keep that one on your list, especially if you are interested in more, like, horror video game type movies.
And the first one, if you haven't seen the first one, it is streaming on YouTube. I think this is a step up.
It is.
But it's officially streaming. Like, it's not like someone has uploaded it. It's officially streaming on YouTube. So if you're interested in that, I would go check out the first one.
Yeah, absolutely.
While you're waiting for the sequel. One that I was... While watching this movie that I want to bring up, I realized my favorite kind of found footage is the one that is happening live and happening without, like, being found, if that makes sense. Like, something that is actually playing out. I'm thinking of, like, Chad Gets the Axe, or of Ghost Watch, or of Haunted Ulster Live, which is also playing at Panic Fest right now. This movie surprised the heck out of me. I loved it so much, and it takes place in Belfast. There's a haunted house, much like Ghost Watch. There we are. It's basically kind of like a more comedic Ghost Watch in some ways, where we have, oh my gosh, a reporter named Gary Burns who is out there filming live in this house, weird things happening, and he has, like, a popular children's presenter there with him, and they're sort of on the ground watching things as they you know, play out, and weird shit starts to happen. If you've seen Ghost Watch, you kind of know what you're in for, I would say, a lot of it, but it's funny, and I had a great time with it.
Yeah, I like how it takes the Ghost Watch format and like pushes it, and I think it gets mm-hmm. super weird in yeah. a way that I was like super into.
Yeah.
And I love that they weren't, and this is like the kind of horror comedy, because sometimes I struggle with horror comedy sometimes. I know this is not a new refrain for anybody, but sometimes I'm like, it's more funny than horror, but this one really does a good job balancing, like,
it's a good balance.
Weird, creepy, and the funny, which I do find a lot of the time, like, the Irish and the English, like, the UK is very good at that, with the dry mm-hmm. humor, but I really loved the lead guy who plays, like, the lead anchor. He's very personable and funny, and the comedic timing is just very good. And it's really cool to see a movie take he's 52 take like the love and the mythology around Ghost Watch and turn it into this movie that is a beautiful homage but also trying to be its own thing at the same time. I just had a lot of fun. It's a good time. It's just, yeah, that's another one to keep your eye on. And most of the ones we're going to talk about don't have distribution yet, but I have a feeling it, because a lot of these are at multiple festivals and like are doing the festival run this year, I think we'll have more news probably in the summer or the fall. I love Haunted Elster Live. Another one that I really, really liked that's a really difficult watch that I know that is like kind of confronting is called Cuddly Toys by Kansas Bowling. I did the Q&A of this one with her, and it's essentially framed as like as Faces of Death, like a Mondo documentary where basically she plays herself as a doctor explaining the plight of teenage girls, and then there is a bunch of kind of loosely connected vignettes that are both scripted and unscripted about what it is like to live in the world as a teenage girl. And a lot of the time, adult women are playing teenage girls. So it's kind of a weird disconnect of like, what, these are adults, but it's the whole, like, she's playing with your perception of like teenagers, of young women, of girls, and how they are treated by society, not just by creepy men, a lot of creepy men, but by other women, by what society expects from them. And it's very stylized, very weird, but also very important. It's very, very confronting and like, but funny. And that's what's really cool about it, is that Kansas Bowling is like, yeah, we're gonna just like kind of say fuck you to the patriarchy and be like, y'all are the reason why this is all happening. And it's very wild in its tone, and I love it. And people are gonna fucking hate it when they watch it because of that. Because this is a young woman. Kansas Bowling is in her 20s. She has done a lot of work with trauma. Like, she's done a lot of really weird shit, and it's in a cool way. And it's just, it's not kind of trying to sugarcoat anything. And it's very much pointing the finger. And, I loved it. But it's not gonna be everyone's cup of tea, that's for sure.
One of the things we've talked about on the podcast before is when something is particularly like, I think it comes up a lot when we're talking about maybe something that is not horror and there's horror moments in it, and it like accentuates those horror moments so that you're not ready for them to be that upsetting. And I think this movie, because it is framed, some of it is very comedic and some of it is very, very not. And with that tone, it creates this, like, this feeling. Like, the theater, it was very interesting to watch in the theater because, like, I was trying not to laugh because I found some of it really funny and no one else was laughing except, I think, maybe Mary Beth.
I was, like, singularly the only fucking person in this theater laughing at some of these moments because, like, there was a lot of men in the theater. Like, I will very much say this. Men were the majority in the theater. And there were parts where I was like, I thought it was hysterical. People were not laughing. And I was like, it's because you have no idea what it's like to go through the world like this and to like be confront, and like you're being confronted with the reality that you were not fully aware of. Meanwhile, I'm like, I've experienced all of this, and it's hysterical, like, in a fucked up way.
It's a funny movie, but, like, the tittering that would happen, like, you'd hear, like, someone go, ha-ha, and then be like, wait, almost like, am I supposed to laugh at this? Is it okay for me to laugh? Meanwhile, Mary Beth is cackling, and I was laughing.
The Q&A was incredible, because I'm like, all right, bitches, what was it like filming the rape scene? And everyone was like, I don't know what to ask. And I'm like, I mean, I kind of love being in that position of just, like, watching people squirm sometimes, because sometimes it's just, like, I want to watch people squirm and be uncomfortable and be, and, like, mm-hmm. have to sit in their discomfort, because you're not going to go to hell for laughing, Tony, because, like, the whole point, she wants you to laugh. Like, that's her point. Like, she said in the Q&A, she's like, this was supposed to be, like, juggling all these tones, and not going into too much detail, but I think she's had a hard time with people understanding what she's trying to get at in terms of, sorry, Tony. I was like, no, you won't go to hell for laughing at it. That's the point. But yeah, so that one, I don't think I can share what I've heard about where it's coming, but it's coming out. So don't worry. We'll get to see it if you want to watch it. But yeah, Kansas Bowling, it's really cool.
Well done.
Yeah.
And she was a delight. Like, she started talking about Christian Scientists and just went down a rabbit hole in the Q&A of just talking about the woman that founded Christian Scientists. And it was...
Oh my God, I didn't fucking tell you. I walked into a Christian Science reading room by accident at the airport. At the fucking San Francisco airport. I should have texted you. But, like, I was walking... So our terminals weren't connected. So I had to, like... It was so easy to get. It was, like, super easy to get. All I had to do was walk under, like, walk through, like, a tunnel or something. But I was trying to find how to get to my terminal, and I walked past the Christian Science reading room, and it was just, like, a dead end and just the Christian Science reading room in this airport.
Oh. Wow.
And, like, one of the main terminals of the San Francisco International Airport. It was very strange. No. Carter, it was black. There was no one in there. It was very weird. It was just like, I feel like I've walked into something I shouldn't have walked into. It was very
weird. The start of a found footage film right there, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I know. It was wild. But yeah.
Wow.
So cuddly toys.
Okay.
There was, I think, multiple found footage movies directed by women at the festival this year, too. Which I'm always very excited for, because not a lot of women are in the space as much, so... This is more of like a pseudo-documentary, but still.
I want to talk about one just briefly, but it's one I know that you did not care for. And it's one that, like, I keep thinking about it. And it's called Flesh Games. And
I've come around on it more than I've been thinking about it, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, I know.
I haven't been able to stop fucking thinking about that movie. What the fuck?
Yeah, yeah, same. Same. And I remember Carter was kind of the same way after watching it. And I was like, I'm not sure how I feel about this one. And then I honestly can't stop thinking about it. And it's basically like a regional production of Jackass. Like, there is a group of friends that are stuntmen that just film themselves doing a bunch of stunts of the ilk of which Jackass is, right? Like, there's one stunt where they have, like, a fan with a bat attached to it, and they're standing there blindfolded, and the bat is, like, spinning around and hitting them in the heads. Like, it is very Jackass forward. And I'm watching this, and I'm going, okay, what's the point of this? Because, like, if I'm going to watch this kind of thing, I'd much rather watch Jackass, if I'm being totally honest. But then, oh my gosh, yeah, Carter mentioned lots of testicle stunts. There was... a lot of testicle stunts in this.
Okay, so, like... the filmmaker was at the festival, and he was an incredibly nice guy. So it's, like, yeah. I felt... Not bad, but it was just, like, I just can't connect. And but I don't... The whole thing is about, like, toxic men who are bored as shit and don't know what to do with their energy, and they are... losers, basically. They're framed as losers. Like, I'm not saying that, because, like, the director used a lot of his friends, and so, like, I'm not saying that the guys who are in the movie are losers. It's they're playing losers, which is hard, a hard line to delineate, because a lot of the time it feels so real, because...
It does.
Like, Jackass is a bunch of dudes, like, touching each other's nuts. Like, I love Jackass. I love Jackass. I find it hysterical. So I was excited for Flesh Games because, like, dudes hurting each other is funnier than it should be. But I got really frustrated because there's, like, a lot of shit, and I just, like, I get annoyed by shit jokes. And it devolves into something really interesting. And it does devolve into something interesting about, like, pushing yourself and masculinity, but I got into my own head about, like, why can men make all of these fucking movies about shit and punching each other and women can't get anything done? But, like, especially because afterward we watched Trash Humpers by Harmony Korine, and that movie is absolutely ridiculous and shouldn't exist. And I say that because Harmony Korine is, like, an auteur filmmaker, and he can handle me, like, being a dick to him. But I think Flesh Games is actually really, really fascinating and actually really smart in how it is tackling, like, toxic men and, like, men that are losers who are trying to become something and will do anything for it, and but what happens when they're, like, that it's not funny anymore. I think it's actually really smart. And you know what? Good for this movie for tricking me. You know what? Like, I love that. I walked out of it pissed. And I think because I watched Trash Humpers before, I think it was, like, the double whammy of, like, just two movies. I was like, I can't handle the amount of masculine testosterone shit going on right now. Like, this is too much for me.
It was a very masculine, testosterone-filled day to start the fest. I'm going to be perfectly honest.
It was.
And so, like, I think by the end of it, I was a little exhausted. And I think that that probably worked in Flesh Games is, like, against Flesh Games because... Yeah, there's just...
It didn't work in its favor, but it's gotten... It's, like, worked its way back. It's, like it went in a little 360. It started one way, and then I came back around. It's one of the only movies that's ever actually made me gag, so good for him. I told him that. I'm like, congratulations, you have the rare you have the rare accomplishment of making me fucking gag watching your movie. He's like, fuck yeah. I'm like, congrats, I guess.
And as Carter says in the chat, I love that it snuck up on you and started to creep into much darker stuff than stupid testicle stunts. And I agree with that because there was a moment in the first act or so that I was like, I'm not sure why we're watching this because, as I said earlier, I'd much rather be watching Jackass, to be perfectly frank. But then it started to, like, push that envelope into interesting territory that I really started to really dig. Jackass testicles are way cuter. I agree. I agree 110%. But yeah, so it starts to, like, creep into the horror territory, and I can't stop thinking about the film, and so I think it is much better than I probably initially gave it credit for because of what it's doing.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't review it yet, because now I'm gonna actually give it. You own every Jackass movie and have yet to watch? Come on, Tony. Whomst among us didn't fall asleep watching MTV in the middle of the night watching Jackass reruns and Wild Boys? I mean, Wild Boys was the spinoff.
Me. I thought I was too good, honestly, for it. I was like, ugh, I'm not going to watch this trash. And then some of my friends wanted to go see the Jackass movie in theater. And so I went to go see it with them. And I was like, okay, this is much better than I gave it credit for. And I've been a fan since.
It's appropriate that I finish my third box of tissues in 3 days talking about Flesh Games.
Goodness.
I used to watch a lot of Jackass when I would, like, go to my dad and his girlfriend's apartment and, like, spend the night. And they would just, like, make me sleep on the couch because they didn't have a bed for me. And I would just, like, watch Jackass reruns on their couch at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's got a very special place in my heart. My sad, sad adolescent heart.
But that one's Flesh Games.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about Jeffrey's Hell?
Yeah. I was trying to see if there's anything else before we get to, like, obviously the grand finale movie we're going to talk about. Really briefly, Blue Whale, if y'all want to check that out, is a really cool Russian screen life found footage movie. It's been making the festival circuit, and I was pretty... It gets, like, super wacky and weird, but I think it does capture what it's like to be a sad girl on the internet pretty well. But Jeffrey's Hell. You want to watch a movie and get real uncomfortable about how being in caves? You should watch that one. So Jeffrey's Hell was directed by Aaron Irons. He directed the movie Chest, which played at UF5 Virtual. And this is the follow-up. This is the sequel. But you don't have to have seen Chest to enjoy Jeffrey's Hell. So Chest is the movie he made before this, and then Jeffrey's hell is basically like, oh, I made chest, I'm gonna go do another thing. So again, like they interview cast members from chest, but again, very just meta. To frame it. So the whole thing, it is very meta. It's very much like a pseudo documentary about the director Aaron Irons went missing in a cave. We don't know where he is. And then, oh, we found his footage in a weird place. And so it's then watching him go into a cave that is supposedly called Jeffrey's Hell, that has all of this lore around it. And it's him going into the cave.
It's in Appalachia, right?
Yeah. It's in Tennessee. He's in Tennessee, but it's in like the Appalachian Mountain Range, which if you are on the internet at all, know that there is like abound lore about Appalachia, and like, I wouldn't be going into no cave, but I don't go into caves anyway. So like, that's just me.
Me neither.
Aaron Irons and his wife go caving for fun, like for real,
sure
which
do.
I think is so scary. And you know what? Good for them. But that shit like, makes me want to fucking crawl out of my own skin.
I've seen The Descent. I don't need to.
No. But so this is him basically going on like a solo spelunking mission by accident. Like he accidentally, because he gets a mysterious coordinates. He goes to this place. He's like, oh, it's a cave. Says, oh, I'm just going to walk in a little bit. And then just it goes from there. But it's a lot of Aaron just like going through caves and cold, weird, dark spaces. And it's
all with just his camera. So it's very... very claustrophobic. It's really effective. I'm not a huge fan of some of the swings it takes towards the end, to be honest. But overall, the atmosphere of it and the claustrophobia of it and just the, I don't know, the gumption of going into a cave and filming a horror movie sounds amazing and horrifying all at the same time. And I thought it was really well done for the most part.
I agree. I think Aaron is really, really smart. I think Aaron is just like doing the damn thing on his own, making movies. And I think he's just like, he is doing the thing and living the indie filmmaker dream, which is also a nightmare. But it's awesome to see him like honing his craft and doing stuff like this and taking some really cool risks with story and lore and opening things up. So yeah, it was awesome to see his new movie and how he's progressing as a filmmaker. And that's what's really cool about this festival is I think there's a lot of like shorts filmmakers and also like filmmakers who are feature filmmakers who are coming and you're seeing them grow. Like Robbie's Outwaters detective thing played as part of a special like preview night, which was interesting. And it's just cool to see people who come to this festival and, like, pick up things from other found footage movies and other filmmakers and then make something of their own. It's just been really awesome and inspiring to watch as, like, a budding filmmaker myself.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
And, I mean, we can't not talk about Horror in the High Desert 3.
We have to end on that
we
one.
We have to end on that one before talking about TikTok, of course. But
yes. Dutch Marriage, his new film. The third one in his Horror in the High Desert series. Believe it should be working its way through the Amazon approval process. I believe
I think, like, now,
he was putting it up.
I think like we're just waiting to hear. I think he's just waiting to get the approval. Because I think as soon as he got back from the festival, he said he was uploading it.
Yeah, that's what he said at the fest. So if he did, hopefully we'll be seeing it soon whenever it processes through through Amazon's, you know, requirements. But this one is, boy, what it I'm trying to think of how to like adequately describe it.
Dutch really is building something special with this world he's created. It's like actually quite astounding, and I wish more people were like under like were paying attention, because like something I'm noticing with found footage like an emerging found footage trend with this and like the Blackwell Ghost is that more people are doing found footage series, but they're building really cool worlds. Like, they're not doing this to, like, make a franchise, but, like, they're doing it to build out a fucking crazy world. And it's this kind of low-budget world building that is really fucking cool, because Dutch is creating something that I need to know more about every single time I watch one of his movies, because this movie just opens up more motherfucking questions about whatever is going on in the high desert. And it's awesome how he's like, oh, I'm going to give you a little bit of answer and then 600 more mysteries. And it's this whole thing, it's going back to Gary's story from the first one. So, yeah. like, we have the first movie, we're talking about Gary and him going missing. The second one focuses on those two stories of the two women who've gone missing. And now we're kind of pulling it all back together in three, Firewatch, where Mendoza is a young man who, like, found Gary's case and got really into it and was like, I know exactly where he is. And so this film follows Oscar, like, or his footage, like, the footage of Oscar captured as he's going into the high desert to try to find the cabin where Gary supposedly went missing. So we have everything, like, we have the same format of, like, the Talking Head documentary mixed in with the footage. But again, we're tying, all of it's starting to form, a, like, a bigger picture. I don't want to spoil anything. But let's just say
it's
that,
it's really,
like,
hard to talk about without spoiling.
Let's just say Dutchess continues to be really fucking good at what we have all been calling horror edging, in that, like, nothing is happening, but you hear, like, sound design and the way the camera moves, and it feels like you are actually in that situation. Like, this isn't just, like, pretending, like, oh, we're gonna do a couple little looking around and then a scary thing. It's like, and it's the edging conversation going on, and the chat is very good right now. But, like, it mimics an actual, like, how you actually would be walking around the woods or nature. Like, you're never gonna, the likelihood that you're going to see something scary is very slim, but you're gonna hear a lot of shit, and you're not gonna see a lot of shit, and you're gonna be really scared the whole time. And Dutch is really good at denying you that satisfaction of, like, a cathartic break in tension. And I hate him for it, in the best way, because he's so good at it. Like, I need more horror filmmakers to watch this movie, like, his movies, and understand how to create tension. You can do this in other movies besides found footage, but, like, we have to understand the power of denying that catharsis. Yeah, it's not satisfying, but that's why it's good. And he's really good at that. And, like, he sets up a really cool fourth installment. There's supposed to be five. The fourth installment setup seems really fucking good. So I'm very excited. And Carter, I've been in a theater that's silent in for such a long time. Yeah, like, the theater
was
packed.
Could hear a pin drop.
Like, a lot of people were there to see it. Because, again, like, we've all been getting hype about this. And it's silence.
The nervous energy that was, that it kind of, like, reminded me of the nervous energy that was happening for Cuddly Toys, but in a different
a no more way. Typical, like, horror movie way, rather than, like, right. I don't know how to talk about rape culture kind of way.
Right. But we were in there, and, like, you could feel, like, people kind of anxiously moving around, but it was so quiet. Like, no one said anything, and it was just that tension. And it was the best way to see the film, to be perfectly honest. Like, this is the first time I've seen it in a movie theater, because all the other ones, I missed it last year. It was playing after I'd left on my airplane. And so I missed it in theaters last year, the second one. And so this one was my first seeing it in a theater. And boy, it's an experience, particularly if you have a good audience that is really in on the tension. I really enjoyed it. We need a fourth one now, Dutch.
I know. Consistent series/franchise. It's not a franchise, but, like, this is how you do consistent series storytelling. Please hire Dutch, or don't, and just let me have him for my all forever. But he's really a talented screenwriter and director, y'all. Like, come on. Anyway, Horror in the High Desert 3, Firewatch, is very good.
Yeah, and that was the final movie of the fest, and what a way to end it.
It was,
I have to say,
listeners,
if you're able to get to Unnamed Footage Festival next year, I'd recommend going. It's small, and I think that it works in its advantage. It's like, because you get to meet people, and it just, I don't know, it was fun, and it wasn't all about networking and all that kind of stuff that some of the bigger festivals are about.
It's an actual, like, festival about movies. It's one movie playing at a time. There isn't, like, a big schedule where you have to, like, figure out where to go, if you'll get a seat. It's in these, like, really great small indie theaters in San Francisco, which are surrounded by incredible restaurants. That is not always the case with film festivals. And these two theaters in, a really cute part of San Francisco around a lot of really great Asian food. Yeah, I know it's not always feasible for people to travel, but if you're going to go to a festival, you should go to Unnamed and come hang out with us, because I think we're going to keep going for as long as we can. So
that's my intent.
I really want to go to Salem. I was supposed to go this year, but I don't know if it's going to work out this year for me, unfortunately. I'm not sure yet. Life be lifin'.
All right. So let's transition briefly to talk about more 30 Rock with season 2, episode 4, and episode 5, Rosemary's Baby and Greenzo. I'm curious what your thoughts are on these, because I think Rosemary's Baby's a little rough in terms of some of the humor that it's employing, but I think it's doing so in an interesting way.
It definitely is, but I loved it because, one, it's Carrie Fisher, but two, like, I identify parts of it very strongly as, like, a woman will not be taken seriously. A woman will be, like, written out. Like, it's just, like, yes, the comedy doesn't age super well.
But I think that's the point.
I also agree with that. So, like, I really enjoyed it, and also just, again, as a woman in an industry that chews up women and loves to spit them out, it hit a little too close to home, in a good way and a bad way, especially when...
So the idea before...
How do I know? We should probably tell the conceit of the episode before I start, like...
Liz befriends Rosemary, played by the incredible Carrie Fisher, who was a writer on Laugh-In in this story. And Liz grew up idolizing her and idolizing her humor. And so she goes to get on at a book signing and then is like, hey, you know, we do have like people, guest writers come in. Do you want to do that? And so Rosemary is sure. And, you know, she was writing during the 60s.
I'll let you buy me lunch to get this out of your system.
Yeah. And so it's about that. And it's also about Liz being a follower, because it opens up with her getting a followership award, which is basically for the best follower, because she is ingrained into capitalism and she is putting GE sketches in her show to please the upper...
I can't even begin to talk about how much that part made me want to fucking blow my brains out, where I was like, uh-huh. Oh my God. Uh-huh. I was like, this is too relevant!
And this is the reason why I wanted to show you this one, because it's like, it's dealing with the idea of capitalism in art and how impossible it is to make art when the dollar is on the line, and Liz basically deciding that she needs to not be her hero and she needs to embrace capitalism because she's in the system. And it's kind of dark in that regard, but it's also, I think, very funny in some places.
Oh, it's hysterical. And it's, well, and like, it's, that is hysterical as well, along with like the through lines of, again, I watch this in a fever haze back to back. So like, if I combine something happening in the next episode, I deeply apologize. Wait, was the dog fighting in this one or the next episode?
Dog fighting was in this one.
Okay, cool. I was like, uh-oh, I don't know if I'm right. We have like a Tracy and Jack Donaghy thing. I have seen this episode before, by the way. These two, oh, you somehow have? I don't remember them strongly, but I was like, I've watched these before, especially the next one. Again, I don't remember how or why, but I had. But they have this incredible through line of these two guys, and then also Jenna and Kenneth doing the page, like, fucking Fight Club. And yeah. It's just like, this show, I don't think I ever appreciated. And also, it's a great show for people with ADHD, because boy oh boy, it just fucking zips through every joke quickly. And it's mm-hmm.
And so if one doesn't land, there's gonna be another one like in two seconds that'll get you laughing.
I also love when shows bleep out bad words, like fiction, like shows like this that are scripted, that it's, I don't know why it always cracks me up, but it's just such a good gag, especially like when she's saying, use racial slurs. Like, it's funny. It's pushing the envelope. You can do racial slurs on TV. It's the 90s. No, it's not. And I also love seeing it with the woman. I feel like we see so often these, like, washed-up male writers, and a lot of the time, and so having Carrie Fisher play that character, like, as a woman, is also just, like, a refreshing little thing that you don't usually see in this kind of show.
Yeah.
And boy, oh boy, just her, going and she to gets her... to... seeing her apartment when they go to her, Carrie Fisher's apartment, and she's putting wine in her thermos, and there's just rats running around, and like,
she's shaking a can of dice at like the rats. And she's like, have you been drinking that all day? Liz asking her, because she's pouring wine into her thermos. She's like, it's heart healthy. And she's like, all day? She's like, come on, Liz, it's the 90s. Just, it's so silly. It's so silly,
but also like, we said the R slur pretty liberally in the 2000s, huh, on television.
Uh-huh.
Almost like, whoa, guys, what the fuck? I do not remember this word being so commonplace.
Yeah, yeah. That's the
that's
word.
Definitely
like that...
That's definitely a shocker. Like, I understand, again, like, I'm not knocking the show. It's just more of a shock. Like,
no,
when
it's,
I hear
it's...
the F slur, I'm like, why? Good God. It's fascinating just to see how things have changed in a relatively short period of time.
Well, and I think that's why it makes watching this one kind of interesting, because it is about, you know, Liz meeting her idol who wrote in the 60s and seeing that that humor would not play today in audiences. And then also it is using humor that, as we are watching in 2024, doesn't play well. And then it was ubiquitous. So there's an interesting like parallel
forward,
here. I think,
like, forward thinking, maybe even a little bit in a way that's like, huh. Fascinating.
Greenzo.
I have seen this. I remember David Schwimmer for some reason. I don't know if I like full on paid attention, because like I caught some episodes of 30 Rock just like on TV sometimes, mm-hmm. but like David Schwimmer is just like the fucking annoying environmental police. And there's still people like that today. Sorry. When I worked at, can I just like tell a side story? Okay.
Please.
When I used to work at Nat Geo.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine.
So I worked there during the plastics issue, where we did all the whole thing about, like, microplastics and, like, don't do plastic. It's very bad for you. And every time I used a straw, some fucking person out of nowhere would tell me I hated the turtles. And, like, look, my bitch ass, obviously, I love a good glass straw. I have glass straws. But yeah. I went out to happy hour once, and this fucking person had the audacity to say, no straws for the table. And I was like, I'm sorry. What if I wanted a straw? And, like, I know that that is terrible of me. Like, I am not, I try to be as environmentally conscious as possible, but I worked with a lot of parodies of this, of people mm-hmm. who would, like, because it was, like, very, it was actually very, like, kind of shamey culture there. It was like, oh, you should have your own utensils. You should use beeswax wrap instead of plastic wrap on your sandwiches. And, like, it was never a rule, but, like, I could feel the eyes on me when, like, it wasn't, like, in a cute little glass box with my perfect silverware. And I was like, some of us bitches don't get paid enough to work here to purchase that stuff, my dude. Like, I'm sorry, I'm glad. Like, thank you, Nat Geo, for giving me a single glass straw. Like, good for me. But, like, anyway. Sorry. But just, this episode made me be like, oh, I know people like this.
Yeah, and like, it's the idea behind this one is that Jack is it's Green Week at NBC, and so, you know, they're trying to, all the companies under the umbrella of GE are trying to make money off of this green phenomenon. And so he hires David Schwimmer's character to be Greenzo, which he has like a green suit, these big Mickey Mouse hands that are yellow, wears a backwards cap, and just gets power hungry and goes off the rails, and it started to be like a way to sell GE products as a way of like, you know,
GE's
the corporation
also in the
can help
episode
save.
Before, so I'm like, did GE actually sponsor this episode? I was like, what are the like mechanics of what's going on here? About like, did they actually?
I think a lot of it has to do with the writers who are probably annoyed with the product placement that has to happen and things. And so I do think that, because this is also the season that happened during the writer's strike, and so this season is reduced. There's only I think 17 episodes this season.
Okay.
Because it was going into the writer's strike. And so, like, this is at a time where, like, there's a lot of corporate greed. It's still happening to an even higher degree. But, like, it was very focused on the idea of, like, with writer strikes and all that kind of things happening. So, like, I do think that this was intentional. I also do wonder if, like, they were asked to include GE products and stuff. And so they're like, okay, bet, you know?
But then I really Jack do. Also says, Jack is like, they're putting all the departments against each other to see who can make the most money off of environmentalism. And here mm-hmm. I'm going to win! It's David Schwimmer in the most 90s-ass Captain Planet shit I've ever seen in my life. And guess what, guys? Companies are still doing this stuff to yep. this day. Isn't that sad how things haven't really changed?
Jesus it's become Christ. More insidious. Like, it was outwardly misogynist, and now it's
much
like...
much sneakier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But one of my... So, one of the reasons I really love this is I love David Schwimmer in this, and his comment, like, early on where he's, like, talking about how he hasn't had a gig in a while, and so he's really excited to get this gig because the last one he did was for some politician, and the cuts to the commercial of him holding this kid, and he's like, Hillary Clinton wants an all-homosexual army. What is that going to do for my children or something like that? It's so funny and so of that time. It's so of that time.
Also, I'm obsessed with the Kenneth birthday party angle. Yeah. And how, like, poor Tina Fey, Liz, goddamn, was just like, I can't go to another one of his parties. I'm always the only one there. And then it just is like, T.I.'s gonna be at the party.
My favorite part is the idea that, like, T.I., so people are like the rapper, right? And then when it gets to Jack, and he's like, Paul Logan of Texas Instruments is gonna be there? And that just kills me. So much, just because of, like, the misunderstanding.
It's so good. I love it. Tracy, I just gotta start a little rumor. And I just, like, I think I forgot how much I love Tracy Jordan's character. Tracy Jordan, is that his real name?
Uh-huh.
Okay, cool. I was like...
playing Tracy Morgan.
Yeah. Okay, I literally, for a second, couldn't remember.
There's a meta joke later on this in the series where Tracy realizes that he's in a show, and he's like, my name is Tracy Jordan, I'm a character in a show. Like, it's yeah.
It's funny. Love his character. I love his character in the show. He just, like, is the lovable idiot, but also, like, mm-hmm. very sweet in a lot of his asinine behavior, and I appreciate that.
Well, next, for next Little Cuts... we are doing probably my two favorite episodes of the show.
Oh, okay.
Episode 210, which I don't want to spoil anything, but has a very unexpected moment towards the end that I love so much. And MILF Island. If y'all want to talk about how, like, I ended up watching MILF Manor, it's because of this episode of MILF Island. And it is such a smartly written episode.
Oh, I'm so excited. Oh, we forgot to mention Al Gore appears in Green Zone,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, Al Gore.
I love that. I'm like, well, you know this was, like, the fucking early 2000s or whatever, when, like, you could just get Al Gore on a TV show for a couple minutes. You know what I mean? Like, what a time to be alive. Anyway, sorry. I forgot to mention the Al Gore of it all in that one.
Yeah. The cameos, man. But yes, yeah, so we're still in season 2, and we're doing episode 210 and MILF Island, so...
Oh my god.
I really recommend watching these two cool. to join us next week. But yeah. But who are we chatting with? Speaking of legendary things, who are we chatting with on Monday, Mary Beth?
This was so cool. So on Monday, we're chatting with the legendary Larry Fessenden. His new movie, Blackout, is out on today, April 12th, as of the recording of this podcast. You can check it out before the episode is live. And he brought with him Henry Portrait of a Motherfucking Serial Killer. And it's a really, really cool talk. He has a lot of really cool stuff to say about it. And he has just, like, a lot of really cool stories. And he's just, like, you know, he's a big fixture in the horror community. And as an actor, as a writer, as a producer, as a director. So it was, like, a huge honor to have him on the show. So get
it really
excited, because he's super cool.
He was a delight to chat with, too. Like, he just, very down to earth.
Yeah. And we just, like, talked a lot about serial killers.
I would have loved to have more time to devote, because, like, this dude has had quite a career in the indie horror scene. And he's also, like, wrote, you know, for Until Dawn. Like, he wrote he worked on the script for that video game, and he's also in it. Well, his character, like, visions of him. I don't know if he filmed or what he did, but, like, his figure
is in the game. He's done about everything. I swear to God, he's touched about every different thing you could do in the space. So.
Yeah, so just a great conversation. So.
Yeah.
Join us next week.
All right, listeners. I'm alive. You've heard from us. We want to hear from you. You probably haven't seen any of the films from the Unnamed Footage Festival, but we'd love to hear what you're excited about and what you really want to see and what you're hoping that gets a release date soon. You should also let us know what other 30 Rock episodes I should be checking out. Obviously, Terry is the master, because I will say, Terry and I are both lovely neurodivergent weirdos who fall asleep watching things on our respective devices, and we shared a hotel room, and he did fall asleep watching 30 Rock every night, so I can, in fact, tell you that he is as much in love with the show as he claims to be. Not that I ever doubted it, but I just...
I asked Mary Beth, I was like, I think you sleep with noise-canceling headphones. Do you mind if I watch? Because, like, it is literally what
like
I do.
It's like that TikTok meme, like, you might have put on some white noise. it's the fucking 30 Rock spell.
That is literally me. What you see is what you get. I love 30 Rock, and I do fall asleep to it every night.
It was awesome. But, yeah, so any of that stuff, send us an email. It's guardforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on social media. I'm at mbmcandrews on Twitter and at mb.mcandrews on Instagram.
And I'm at Gaily Dreadful everywhere.
And of course, follow the podcast if you're not already, which is weird if you're not. At Scarred Podcast on Twitter and Blue Sky, and at Scarred for Life Podcast on Instagram.
And as of this episode dropping, I believe you have 4 days to vote in the rondos. I think it closes on April 16th.
April 16th.
So if you do want to vote for us, please send in. It's just an email. You can. There's a lot of good stuff out there, so don't just vote for us, I would say. But you do just want to vote for us.
I will put I'll put the link to vote in the show notes here, and I'll also put the other Dread Central stuff that's up for nomination if you want to vote for them as well. It's free to vote. Why not vote for all of the things at Dread Central?
So, yep. So, Rondo Award. And also, please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe to us. Help us through Patreon if you'd like.
Thank you, Derek Power, for artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please stay safe out there. But most importantly, stay creepy and healthy.
And healthy. Good Lord. And until next time.